Welcome to the Positive Education Podcast with Ash Manuel. As we know, the number one hot topic in the world is mental well-being. Ash has worked with close to 1,000 organisations impacting more than 250,000 people, including schools, sports teams and businesses across 45 countries. Today, Ash is regarded as a global thought leader in positive education. In this podcast, you'll hear stories, information and actionable ideas from positive education and well-being experts. The purpose of the podcast is so that you take away ideas that you can execute in your classroom, across your school, at your sports club and in your organisation, plus tips and tricks that you can apply in your own life.
Hi everyone and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel today and I'm really excited to be talking to Chris Crabb. Now, Chris is the wellbeing leader at Seaview Downs Primary School in South Australia, and I actually had the privilege of going into the school in week one of term one this year. So as of recording, this is the 26th of March 2024, and it was about a couple months ago that went in week one to do a workshop with the whole school, but had a great experience. But what I actually really liked was what the school is doing in the wellbeing space now across the whole school. So the setup, the whole school approach, the understanding that it's over time that the wellbeing programs get developed. It's not an overnight thing. It's just a step-by-step process over time. And in this chat today, Chris explains it really, really well of what they've done at Seaview Downs Primary School in South Australia. He also talks about a good place to start with a wellbeing program across the school. He also talks about the importance of listening to the school community, whether that's students, fellow teachers, and also parents themselves. So if you're a wellbeing leader, a school leader, or a teacher, this is for you. There's a lot of takeaways in this, and I'm really excited for this episode with Chris. He drops a lot of information and a lot of takeaways that you can definitely apply in your school, not only in the classroom, but across the school as well. And gives you some ideas about things that you can get started with or work towards implementing. So without further ado, we're going to get into the conversation with Chris. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Welcome. How are you today?
Very good, mate. Very good. Mate, I've been keen to get you on early, I think it was week one. I had the pleasure of going to Seaview Downs Primary School and doing a workshop with a four-day workshop with the students and had a great time, but also got to learn a lot about what the school does. And I'm really, really impressed with the whole school approach that you have to wellbeing. And I know that you've taken over this role in the last 12 months or so. So it's been a build-up. So I really want to talk about what you do at Seaview Downs Primary, because I reckon a lot of schools and teachers and leaders could actually learn a lot from what you've been doing. So I want to ask about the successful start, first 2 weeks of term. Obviously, as of this recording of the 26th of March, we're into week nine, I think, of school or 10. I think. So what is a successful start and how does it work?
As you mentioned then, so definitely off the back of a lot of other people's work, so I won't take credit for the whole thing at all. But yeah, I've been doing the role now for a couple of years. On the back of some really good work for some staff that are still here, but some that have moved on. We've really pushed to develop our successful start the last couple of years. A lot of schools really look at, building those relationships the first couple of days, or they might give a week, probably a little bit different than other schools. We have a whole solid 2 weeks and we just really say that's that permission to connect. All human beings want three things. That's to be seen, to be heard, and to have that connection and belonging. And we really give our staff that solid 2 weeks to build that foundation. So we actually say to them, no testing, no nap plan prep. You've got 2 weeks to find out about your kids. And it's probably importantly as well for you to share as the teacher, share a bit about your own life. Because connection, it works both ways. So I know that maybe traditionally we learn lots about kids, but then we won't be showing the visuals here, but you can see behind me, like the photos and stuff, we really push that as well. Kids being able to see themselves in their classes, but also you bringing in. So they, most kids think that teachers sleep at school and spend their weekends at school, which some of us do. But yeah, connection both ways. We say no testing. So there's, data or learner information, we call it. So much of that now is recorded that teachers can look it up on Power BI and all those things. Really, that first couple of weeks, we know when kids feel safe and connected, they'll learn better. Yeah. So we set up, all aspects of our school. We look at everything with that trauma-informed lens and the ASD lens, because we think that, why not? We're all on the spectrum there somewhere in terms of we've all experienced some type of trauma or some type of, we're on that spectrum somewhere in terms of ASD. So we get those routines really consistent at the start of the year. Yep.
And what's some of those practical things that teachers might do with the students in those first couple of weeks? What's an example of something they might do with the students to build those connections or get to know them and make them be heard and everyone have a voice kind of thing?
Yep. So throughout the 2 weeks, we have a series of activities that they sort of step through. So you're not just going in wholehearted right from the word go, and you drip feed that over a couple of weeks. One of the things that we do at our school, though, is we have a check-in each morning. We give teachers ownership, though. That check-in can look different in every classroom. But so that kids have, and we call them kids or children or learners, we're sort of moving away from students. They have an opportunity to be seen and heard each morning. So that's one of them, setting up that. We have mindfulness activities after each break time, so it's setting up the routine behind that. And then we give teachers a whole heap of different activities, just relationship building activities, those, I guess, getting to know you ones.
Yep.
We give them a lot, but we also don't expect that the teachers, it's ownership in their own own learning spaces. We had yourself come in this year. What was that? Day three. Receptions have been at school for 3 days. So well done. Well done. That was something we did a little bit different as well, to have an outside provider to come in, see how our kids interacted with them. And then, you gave us some little bits of gold that then the kids could go on with and the staff could go on with throughout the term.
Absolutely. And you, just from obviously that first 2 weeks is dedicated for what you were just talking about, and then that the successful start. So do you, as the wellbeing leader, I think you mentioned that you do provide some resources, but it's about providing those resources, then the teachers taking ownership of it, putting their own spin on it. Is that sort of how it works?
Yeah, so we provide, a lot of activities, but we don't want to be, the internet's everyone's best friend at the moment. But I guess a bit of a framework, like within that 2 weeks, we want you to connect with your buddy class. So everyone's got a buddy class, and we assist with that as well. We want, we have a community connections committee at school. So it's going through, starting that really early on so that we don't get to the end of the term and we're starting that. So right from the first week, getting the kids talking about community connections committee, talking about house captains, vice captains, all of our clubs that we've got at school, we really want to kick that straight off. So we've got gardening club, Minecraft club, all of those. So providing that framework to get that started so the kids can just feel as much ownership in their class, but that connection and belonging right from the word go.
Yeah, absolutely. And what feedback did you get from this year? What things really worked? Maybe one or two things that really worked well, and maybe looking back on it, something that maybe you could have done better or that could be improved or whatever it might be.
Yeah, always looking to improve. And so we have SWAT, it's called Student Wellbeing Action Team, but now we've gone away from students. So it's I think we've gone CVU Wellbeing Action Team. And that's a group of teachers that I get together with and review things like this. Also, we put it to our staff just to see what worked, what didn't work. We actually mentioned that in terms of the kids and the staff loved having yourself coming in, pushing that to the second week. And I remember us having that discussion, like, how's it going to go? And, you know, you got to learn from how you went. But pushing that to the second week, so no outside providers for that first week. That was one thing. One thing that worked really well is we have, within the first week, all classes come for a visit into it was called our interoception space, but that's now, we've renamed it as the wellbeing space. So all classes actually have a visit in here. The space I'm in now, and explicitly learn how to use that, learn how to access, how to ask to get into the space, what to do within the space. That was one thing, yeah, that definitely worked well this year.
And we'll talk about the wellbeing room shortly as well.
Yep.
Can I just ask, why have you gone away from not calling kids or students anymore? I'm just interested to know why.
Yeah, we've picked up a bit of language this year. And again, it's like the back of other people's work. And that was from a visit we had down to Woodlawn Primary School down in Victoria last year. We had a team of teachers that went over there. There's a few schools that we've noticed that are, changing. Just some of that, like, language is so important. And I think when we call someone a student, it's like, you know, they're a kid and they get to 5 years old and then they start school and all of a sudden you're this student of a system. You'll actually hear, if you ever listen to Martin Westwell, the CE, he often uses learners. I've never actually heard him say students, so learners, which is another one. But yeah, just to remind us that they're kids. So when we're dealing with these kids and, you know, you're an ex-teacher, and you got 30 lovely children in your class by the end of the day, and some of the interactions that you have throughout the day, it's just reminding yourself when you're using that language, kids, is just, they're a child, and our purpose is just to guide them through while we've got them in our care through the day.
I totally get what you're saying. It's interesting, isn't it? I think just reflecting on when I go into a school or when I was teaching, like what I used to call, I used to normally call them by year level.
Yep.
So if it's a year three session, year threes or something like that, that's what I think I'd normally run with. I don't think I really referred to as students in typing and
all that. Yeah, yep.
Like that, they'll be students.
Yep.
But interesting. No, I have to.
Kids, children, a couple of other ones. So yard duty, we've gone to play supervision. And again, it's just a reminder. It's more of a reminder for us as adults. Like, you think about the negative connotations around yard duty and, you know, you'd never like a yard duty. Whereas you call it, like, you're actually out there supervising kids play.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's play supervision. Data is learner information.
Yep.
Even our work, the language in itself, like work, it sounds like such a negative. So that's the learning that we're doing.
That's really that's really interesting, particularly around the data, because particularly, I mean, we're in a data driven world at the moment, particularly in schools. Everyone wants this data, but renaming it. Did you say learning information?
Yeah, learner information. So it's the information that we get from our learners.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that does make sense, that language that we use, for sure. So now that I reckon it's a brilliant idea, that successful start. And as you said, often schools might do a couple of days or a week, but giving that 2 weeks, that's brilliant to give the students, the learners, an opportunity to connect to with each other, but the teachers as well, because that's so important. You're right, like I just said at the start, the foundation
that they build from, and like say, what are we, 8-9 weeks down the track? It just pays dividends when kids are, you know, they say neurobiologically kids can't actually learn if they don't feel safe within their environment. So it's just making sure that every child feels safe and connected. And you know, most of our kids, you get them straight away, but there's those ones that we need to lean in. So after our first week, our staff meeting, and we actually reflect on, right, who are those few kids that we need to just lean into a little bit more, and how can we? Yeah, you're never going to get them all.
Yeah,
but why not try? I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I like how you mentioned before, like the ways that teachers like share photos of them and talk about what they do. Because I remember when I was teaching, and you might run into a kid at the supermarket on the weekend or out of school hours, and you're right, they think you're alien. They hide behind the aisle, and they think, "What's this person doing?
What are they doing here? Why are they sleeping at school?"
it's pretty funny. I really appreciate you sharing that, and hopefully, some listeners can take away of your those points
yeah.
that you share with us. And I guess one of the things that CV Downs is really focused on is you sort of mentioned it there as well, is a whole school approach to wellbeing.
Yep.
So what is it, what in your view, what is a whole school, and how you, well, yeah, first of all, I guess two things. What's your view of a whole school approach to wellbeing, and how do you do that at CV Downs?
Yeah. So two parts. Okay, there's an awareness and a philosophy behind it that we're working towards, and we've set that intention. We review that. And then there's, I guess, the strategies or procedures. So how that actually looks, what does it look like? What would you like me to do first? How it looks or the philosophy?
Yeah. Go the philosophy then, how you implement it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And this is probably, you know, a little bit different to the direction of other schools, but we've really pushed, this has sort of been, this year has been our latest focus, is that above all else, everybody within our school is a human being first. That's off some work of, I don't know if you know Ben Crowe's work, but that human being first approach, and that's everyone. So that's, you know, we obviously look at our kids first, and understanding that behind every behavior, there's a need that's not being met, but also having that lens on that teacher, when sometimes the teacher's a bit disgruntled, or that parent that comes in particular, it's a bit disgruntled, and you know, just being able to lean into that parent and say, all right, I can tell that you're feeling a bit angry here. What, you know, can you tell me what's going on? Quite often, once you sort of take down that, you lean in with that compassion, you realize that there's some stuff going on at home, and that, you know, that parent isn't actually angry at the teacher or the situation. It's just, you know, something going on with them. But yeah, that's been a really big one that we're still working towards, is that that human being first. And that's leadership as well. Realizing that, you know, the principal isn't always this person that stands up there in a suit and tie, and which, you know, we're really lucky with our principal here. We often see him on the skateboard at the end of the year with the year sixes and, you know, out playing Foursquare and all of those things. But yeah, that human being element is massive. Feelings. So all feelings are okay to feel. It's what we do with those that make us who we are. So we know that we need to teach kids about feelings. They need to name it, to tame it. As adults, I don't think as a society we're that great at talking about our feelings or knowing our feelings.
Name it, to tame it. It's a good one.
Yeah, I think that's, I'll butcher it, but I reckon that's Dan Siegel's, maybe, Name It to Tone It, a few others. But yeah, just teaching kids that, you know, one, it's okay to be, and everyone within our school, sorry, it's okay to be who they are, like that. No one needs to change. So that's a big one. But that, in terms of understanding their feelings, is that it's really normal for all of us to feel worried. All right. It's really normal for all of us to feel anxious. And, you know, for most of us, we grew up and didn't understand that. We didn't realize that we went into social situations. We had that, you know, worry tummy we talk to the kids about here. But, yeah, like if we can get it right, if we can teach our kids, and we use the Resilience Project here as one of our programs to teach kids about feelings, if kids can understand that it's okay to be worried, it's okay to feel anxious, and just being aware of that, like, you know, they're going to be unstoppable by the time that they're adults, because they're going to realize that most of us feel insecure at certain times. It's just being aware of it, and then some strategies of how to deal with it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I think like awareness or self-awareness is such a powerful thing. And early, as you said, early that people learn it, at particularly at school age level, they're going to be unstoppable, because I think that's what I often talk about as well, is that self-awareness thing, understand how you're feeling.
Yeah.
And then, well, unfortunately, yes, we've got people around us, but it's up to us to do something about
whether we're
feeling a bit anxious. Okay, well, it's up to me to come up with some strategies. And kids don't know what to do exactly, but if you give them, what works for me might not work for you, but at least we can give them some ideas, some tools to try
to
work out. And I think that's really important. It's so good to hear. That's a big emphasis. And just going back to what you're saying, like, about human first, like, it's not easy to do, is it? Like, if you've got a parent, well, this is just an example, with a parent coming up and having maybe fired up and a bit emotional, It's not easy as a teacher after a long day to take that human first approach because they might be a bit tired themselves. But and you say it doesn't happen overnight. That's practice, isn't it? People can do it better than others naturally, like have that empathetic side. But it's just that awareness thing. Okay, you might be able to see that person approaching and just saying to yourself, just having that little self-talk, human first, just to remind yourself that it's not personal. This person might just be having a bad day, and you're gonna maybe unfortunately got the problem. But it's so good that that's a big focus of the school because it does take practice. It's like a skill in a sport.
Yeah,
you practice it, and the more we do it, the more aware of it, the better we get.
Yeah, modeling it as well. There's a lovely quote by Lael Stone. She says, "If we see a person in front of us, and if we could see their life story behind them, I think that we would have only compassion for every human on this planet." It's just that reminder of, like, we've all got, I don't know, I was about to swear then, probably can't swear on this one, but we've all got staff, the S word, going on in our lives. And we're really open with our staff and giving them permission to feel all of those feelings. Like, it's not uncommon for our staff meetings to have some people, because we do a check-in to our staff meeting as well, two feelings and why. It's not uncommon for some of our staff to share some stuff at that time and have some tears. Myself included, the principal included it once before, really leading and modeling that. But yeah, it is, you don't just get it straight away to realize to have that compassion. And you've definitely got a threshold there that you need to develop over time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess there's some philosophies behind it. How do you actually implement that, mate?
Yeah, so this has been sort of over the last few years of things that we've implemented slowly and been, trying to be pretty crafty around not implementing too many things at once. Also, I think as a leader, you really need to work with your staff to take ownership and, you present ideas, but you ultimately want them to take it on and own those ideas. Hence why we have our school wellbeing action team, is that we have those five staff that are key staff within our school that will action, they buy in, they make sure they're actioning it in our classrooms in different areas. And then it just catches on. That's, one of the strategies we've used. But I guess, so we have check-ins each morning that I mentioned. We also have check-ins at staff meetings. That could be two feelings and boy, could be, what's a win that you had yesterday. Lots of different ones that we use. We have mindfulness times after break times. Again, we give each teacher in their learning space, so we've presented lots of different ways they can do that and what it could look like. We highlight when some key staff are doing some different things and how people are responding, but we want staff to choose something they're comfortable with. Wellbeing is a space that not all of us are comfortable in. Calm corners in classrooms. Again, we sort of set that as a bit of an expectation once it had grown out through a few key staff. We have break cards with access to our wellbeing space that I know we'll talk a little bit more about later. Explicitly, we use resilience project lessons here. And that's teaching wellbeing on, once a week. How to name feelings, understanding our negative biases that we have, understanding that we all worry, we all feel anxious, just giving those kids that awareness at a young age. House captains at school that run lunchtime activities, giving them, as many back to that connection and belonging. The more opportunities we can give kids to connect and belong to the school, the safer they feel, the more learning they're going to get done as well. And, the more they give back. We have community connections committee. So you might have heard of like SRC, I guess, that we have another, so not myself that runs, we have another staff member. And that's been a really big push the last sort of few years here at school, has been working to our staff strengths. So finding out what staff are interested in, and then, myself or some other leadership will take on some extra things to free them up. So we have lunchtime clubs, garden club, who's run by our PE teacher, loves it. We have a Minecraft club. So finding those niche clubs that we can have, but targeted, like we don't just do it, you know, for any, it's particularly for, all right, we can identify a group of kids here that are struggling to connect, what's something they're interested in. Drawing clubs at recess. So I'm in this room every single recess because we've got, and you know, I don't mind that though. Like we had, I think some staff had identified about roughly five kids. It was still finding, hey, you know, all schools have your buddy benches and those things, but we still had some kids that were wandering around and just were really struggling with their social skills to connect, find what their key interest was. Some wanted drawing, some wanted to do sketching. So I've given up each recess break and they come in here and that's slowly grown out. Now there's about 10 kids in there. We do have inclusive spaces that are open every break time. So we have the library at recess and wellbeing room at lunch where there's activities. But what we found was there was, yeah, with the drawing club is there were still a few kids that those spaces were too loud for. And, you know, just through responding to what they were saying, that's why we now have another quiet space. The language was a big shift, you know, is what it looks like. So that language shift, even, and again, we've just borrowed that from another school. We didn't come up with it, but one that we've pushed this year is so parent-teacher interviews, connection conferences, because that's, you know, what they come down to is it's that connection, connecting with those. And as soon as you know, parents had no idea what the connection conference was, so we still had to put parent-teacher interview in brackets. But, you know, that's the purpose behind it is to connect with those families.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, parent-teacher interview, you think of the language around an interview and parents, and I'm sure teachers would be a bit stressing out, but you just, the purpose of it is to connect with our families. They're probably the main things that I can think of off the top of my head.
That's a great list, mate. That's a lot of things. And I think that you made a key point. You haven't done this all in one hit. It's been dripped out over time. So what if you, like, for example, if a school was looking to maybe expand their whole school approach to wellbeing and maybe they have a few things in place but not much sort of structure, where would you suggest they start? Where would you start?
Awareness with the staff. On a purpose and awareness with the staff. Again, not everyone's comfortable within that wellbeing space, so it's just presenting those ideas with the staff and getting the staff comfortable first. So we started all of this at staff meetings. Like when I stood up there and started doing check-ins with our staff in staff meetings, like the amount of eye rolls and the uncomfortableness, and, you know, everybody has the ability to pass, the amount of people that would pass and all of those things. Being aware of that though, because you identify those staff that are passing all the time and realize that, all right, this isn't their safe space. But yeah, awareness with the staff is key. Then we move to things we can be doing with our students. Our big push this year is now going beyond that. We've realized that, you know, we can control so much. Well, not control, we have influence. Influence, not manipulation. We have influence only so far. We can reach so far with what we do at school. Now, which again is a bit unlike, I guess, what most schools do, but we really want to see how far we can get into families. We're actually organizing a pretty big family. We did one last year. We had Trav Boak come in, legend of the 350 games. Was it last week, actually? He volunteered his time. Like, he could have charged us how much he wanted because he's an amazing speaker, but he came in and talked about vulnerability and well-being with our kids first, but then with our families. And the family sort of didn't know what they were walking into, and they, you know, really appreciated hearing that. And it was great, especially for the blokes in the audience to realize that we can get vulnerable. But yeah, this year we've got some other really good guest speakers, and we're actually investing a fair bit of time, some of our budget, plus we'll get some grant money as well, into a family night, just to, we'd love to call it, you know, connected and conscious families or whatever, but we know that they won't rock up with that. So we'll put on some free food and some booze and get them in, get another footy player in or something. And we want to see how much impact we can have into the family's life, to see what you know, we know that families are calm and connected at home. The kids are regulated. When they get to school, they're regulated. It all comes back to learning. They're going to learn so much more rather than at the minute. We're definitely becoming a more disconnected, I'm not, you go out to a lot of schools, but a more disconnected society because of a lot of reasons.
Yep. Mate, I love that structure, like start first,
yep,
kids, and then families. And I think that's where, I think sometimes it stops, like it stops with the kids, like staff, then kids, but that doesn't necessarily translate home, that it might, yeah, it doesn't. I think from what I've seen in a lot of schools, it's that they might do a parent night or something like that, but it's not, sometimes it's good one-off, but I remember like doing PD at like school, like you go the last day of term, for example, someone comes in and runs a day.
Yep.
Half thinking about what you're doing the holidays, and it doesn't really stick.
Yep.
But it's just that it's a good touch point, but then that it needs to be consistent over time.
Yeah, we're realist as well. Like we know that, and we asked out, you know, I've got some key families that we asked last year just about, you know, how many of you are reading, you know, we send stuff home, the newsletters, and all those things, you know, clips to watch and things. We're all so busy. So we've sort of realized that if we have these community events, get them in, and then once we've got them in, then hit them with the good stuff. It's going to have far more impact than spending hours sending stuff in newsletters. Like I've got two kids and I'm not the greatest at reading newsletters. We're often the ones that when it's a bike day that we need to quickly turn around and do a U-bolt and go and get the bike. But and that's that leaning into compassion with the parents as well, that, you know, they're all so busy. Parenting's the hardest job in the world, far harder than teaching. Having compassion for them and seeing what they want. And that's on the back of, like, so that parent evening, I think the well-being job's changed a little bit in the fact that we're now having families coming in and asking sort of like parenting advice, which I'm not a parenting expert, but responding to their, you know, what they're coming in and what they're needing help with. And then as a school saying, all right, we've got so many people asking about this and we can give all the resources we want. And then we just sort of went, right, let's actually organize something for them, see how they go with it.
Yeah. I think that's great leadership as well in terms of listening to what people within the school are saying, in this case, the parents, and then delivering what they are asking for. Yeah. I think that's really important because we don't know everything. Like, not everyone knows everything. Not everybody knows about everyone else, but just listening and then providing what the school or parents want in this case, it's such an important thing. And also what you did with listening to the kids, like with that, creating that space at recess times where they come in and draw. That's amazing. Mate, with that SWOT team that you're talking about, I think it's the CVU
Wellbeing Action Team. Yeah. I'm trying to get out of Student Wellbeing Action Team.
What, students or teachers?
Teachers. Teachers. So we were going to originally have a student one and then a staff Wellbeing Action Team. But no, that's teachers. So I guess the student one is our community connections committee.
Yeah. So I was just going to ask about that. That's what I thought. So the teacher, the SWOT teacher version, I reckon that's a really good idea because it gives buy-in from a teaching point of view as well when you're starting out. Like you might, as you said, you started out doing the check-ins.
Yeah.
How far into it did you, and a big shout out to Sue Mateen as well, who would have
been
CV Downs program, who's now at Seacliff Primary, the principal
there. Amazing operator. I learned so much and continue to. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And so with that, when you were setting it up with probably over the last few years, this being there, then now yourself, I guess, taking over, how far into the journey did you create that SWOT team of teachers?
That was one of the first thing. So you asked before about, you know, where did you start? That was one of the first things was when the job went up for the wellbeing lead, I knew that a few other people had put in for it and I knew that there was people that were passionate about it. I was fortunate enough to win it.
Mm.
But then I didn't want their thoughts to go unheard. So yeah, that was sort of out of that, was to get, you know, we're all responsible for well-being. And I guess some schools, when I go to, it's like they're flicking everyone to that well-being lead. But just knowing that everyone's responsible for well-being. We're responsible for our own well-being, not for anyone else's, but within the well-being, within a framework of a school, is everybody's responsibility. We have that really big push that it's not anyone's kid that's in a class. You know, they're all ours. And all of us can impact on how they are when they're at school. But yeah, that was one of the first things that we did. So we meet 3 times a term, check in with each other. We look at the well-being of the whole school. We look at, you know, we do training together. So some different training, Berry Street. We took a few of them to Woodlawn Primary last year.
Woodlawn, sorry, by the way.
Woodlawn Primary School is a school in Victoria run by, I've read it quite before, from Lale Stone. Run or was set up by Lale Stone. But yeah, I won't give too much there. Look into it if anyone's interested in it. Just a really different thinking school in Ceres, just out of Geelong in Victoria. Independent schools, so they do have some more flexibility, but the whole concept behind it. Yeah, that, like, a lot of that stuff we've spoken about today, that, you know, saying yes to the feelings, no to the behavior, the things that we've pulled from their school. But yeah, SWAT team meet 3 times a term. You know, we look at different elements within the school. We look at, you know, our core business is our kids. So that's the first thing that we'll look at. Or we check in with each other first, human being first. We check in with each other, see how we're going. Talk about the well-being of our kids. And then the last thing we actually started doing is just checking in. And I think within that, taking the well-being of the whole school, is checking in and say, you know, is there anyone that you've noticed that we just need to lean into a little bit more at the school at the moment? You know, it might be the groundsman. It might be, you know, just someone that you've just noticed is a little bit off. But spreading that responsibility while also giving those other staff members the opportunity to develop their skills, so that if they're to go for another job, and then if I'm ever away, you know, to lean on one of them so they can come and occupy my well-being space when they're away, our well-being space, not mine.
Yeah, absolutely. And just on that well-being space, so it's recently changed from the inter-reception room to well-being space. So what is the well-being space, or some schools might know it as a
Interception space. Yeah. So interception is our 8th sense. So to be aware of, you know, are we hungry? Are we, you know, do we need to go to the toilet? Those types of things. So interception space, they're popping up. You know, it's a bit of a buzzword at the moment, like resilience. Interception spaces are popping up at lots of schools. Lots of them are, what's the non-sexist term for unmanned? No one in them. There's no staff member in them. Well, you know, there might be a staff member for a couple of hours a day, but there. I often hear when we get together with other wellbeing leaders that, you know, the kids go there and they muck around. Like, when I was a kid, that's exactly what I'd be doing if I was going into a room and there was no one else in there. So we identified early on that it needed to be. And again, this is off the back of Sue Martini's work, who's now the principal down at Seacliff Primary School. She was the driving force behind this before I even got to this school. But it has changed a little bit. But we found that interoception, the word in itself, our receptions could never say it. We'd find the parent, like, so we'd have parents coming through the school and they couldn't say it either. They didn't know. So we're like, well, let's save ourselves some time here. Let's just call it the wellbeing room. Also, we had some learner information from some of the well-being surveys that schools do, department schools do, well-being and engagement collection. We're sort of pulling them apart and we go, do kids actually know what the word well-being means? And we thought that would just be a bit of a starting point to say, well, you know, I guess a lot of this room encapsulates well-being, so let's just rename it the well-being room. It's easier for them. Did you want me to talk about
what's in there and how's it work?
Yep. Very fortunate to have, it's a large space, which I'm really lucky about. And we've the principal, thank you, Sam Winters, has pushed so that it can have such a large space, because it does get pretty full time to time.
Would you say it's as big as a classroom or double class?
Yeah, as big as a classroom. Definitely. So we have, I guess, think of it as like a sensory room, but not too sensory. The fact that some people want to come here to calm down, but different. Yeah. So think of it, I guess, in your mind as a sensory room, but kids can act, they can ask, so they can self-refer, which is amazing when they can self-refer, when they become self-aware of, so that's that interoception thing, become aware that they need that break, or teachers can refer them. They have a break card that is tick. There's a series of feelings on there they can tick and take as a break card. They come up. We try and encapsulate it to 10 minutes, but you obviously adapt. You know your kids. Yeah. But, yeah, 10 minutes, they'll come in, they sign in just on a little iPad. Some kids want to talk to you straight away. Some kids do not want to talk to you. They'll come in. They have, I'm just looking at now. So right now I feel, so they identify, there's a bit of a chart. Right now I feel, they think of one or two core feelings that they're feeling. It's really important for them to be able to identify that. Yeah. Again, all feelings are okay to feel. What we do with them that makes us who we are. Then the second part, which is really important that we've found this year, is they then identify what it is that's going to help them feel better. So rather than me stand there and say, oh, why don't we try this? Why don't we try this? You know, let's do some stretching. Let's do some breathing. Should we try this? Kids intrinsically know what they need. They might not be able to name it because of their vocabulary, or they haven't explored or had the experience to, look the opportunity to practice some activities. But so we've got a whole heap of activities that they can, there's pictures for the younger ones, and I'll help them read them as well. They'll identify something that they need. That can be drawing and coloring. All right. Mm-hmm. That can be stretching. Some kids just need that stretching, that movement. Some of them need, some breathing. Some of them might need to do a puzzle. There's a whole series of them. So they identify that. They might want to co-regulate. So they might want me to be involved, or they might not. So I check in with them, and they have about 10 minutes. There's a couple of big timers. They have 10 minutes. Students that are in the space know not to be interacting with the other kids that are in here. Within that 10 minutes, though, I'll sort of read them and see when they want me to engage, and check in with them. It's a safe space in here. One thing with my role, which would be different to a lot of other wellbeing roles I know at other schools, is behavior, unless the principal and the deputy are away, behavior management isn't something that and all the wellbeing leaders over here go, what?
I was going to say, mate, it's incredible, like the wellbeing, they might be the wellbeing leader at the school, but it ends up just being behavior management.
They've got to suspend kids and like that. Yeah. How can you advocate for a child?
And just having that person in your role who's primarily, you're not about behavior management, that's not your role.
Yeah.
And I think that's such an important position to have in a school.
Yeah.
And it's just so common that at schools, the way it's structured is that well-being person is a bit of everything.
Yeah.
And it ends up being taken away from what they're
doing. Yeah. Wearing too many hats. So, within it, I think back to when I was at school, and I think those, the more that once you become a teacher and you get older, but like those core kids at school that, some had happened at lunchtime. They were so irritated. They carried into the classroom. In this classroom environment that is just these things just building up, and then you get that swearing, that throw on the chair, all of those things. So we teach our kids to be self-aware, so to come in and access a space, or that if a teacher suggests, as an adult in the room, if they suggest that you need interoception to come up, there's days where you have, the kids come in. It's no fault of their own. Like you imagine, you got to feel for those kids. You imagine if you were feeling that you need to swear or throw something when you're at school, like that must feel horrible inside. Safe space, they do that. There's no behavior consequences in here. You get a lot of language, but they We talk about being in balance and out of balance. So giving them that 10 minutes, they've come in, they're so out of balance. What do you need in here? Like they'll jump on the trampoline. We've got heavy balls, stretchy things to get back in balance. And then once they've actually calmed themselves down, or we've done it together, co-regulation, then we might do some type of restorative chat, or we check in with someone if something's happened. Again, another Lael Stone one that she talks about is like the glitter jar. So imagine the glitter jar when you're out of balance, that glitter jar is just going mad and there's no reasoning then. And when we're in a classroom, when, you know, if you're a teacher in the classroom and you're trying to get to the bottom of it and that glitter jar is just going, you know, crazy. We're lucky to, at this school, they have this space. They can calm themselves down. The teaching, the learning can still keep going on within the classroom. And once that glitter jar is settled, then I can check in with them. I'll go through, I think it's Dr. Bill Garvey, but I might have that wrong. He has, which I have up in the room, so name, validate, ask, thank. So once they're calm, if there's something that's actually happened, so naming, you know, what is it that happened, name that feeling, validation. So even if it wasn't, you know, as adults, we think, oh, that was pretty small. For them, it's huge. So however, whatever they say it is, just validate that so they know that it's okay to feel that way.
How would you say that? I understand how you feel or something like that, or is that what you say?
That sounds tough. So right. You might tell me that, you know, something's happened at lunchtime, this is happening. Oh, yeah, really, that sounds tough. I can see you can feel that way. Yeah, if that was me, I'd feel that way too. Yeah. As soon as they've got, you know, they know that it's okay to feel that way, and then asking them again, you know, kids, adults, no matter who it is, they know what they need. So asking them, putting it back on. So rather than me giving them a strategy or a suggestion, is really listening to the child, asking them, you know, what do you need? They might, I'd say that 90% of the time, after they've had that time to calm down, after they've named exactly what happened, they've had their feelings validated, you ask them, 90% of the time, say, no, I just want to tell someone. It's crazy. They've just had that 10 minutes to calm themselves down and then they're fine to go back in. But yeah, so asking them, they might want to have a restorative chat with another child, a couple of kids. It might be a teacher interaction they had at lunchtime at recess. And then the last one, which is that crucial one, is thanking them. So thanking them for actually sharing that, just to close that. Within that 10 minutes, all of that's done within 10 minutes. They sort of keep their eyes, it's a visual timer they have. That child can then go back in, and while the learning's been happening in their class, they can go back in and be successful. You know, some kids, it's once a week they come in, some once every 2 weeks, some it's 3 times a day. But we find that the behavior management, because those, you know, the kids that we have kids that come from other schools, unfortunately, that their behavior management, you know, their pink slips or whatever that come with them is just phenomenal. The awareness that the staff have here of well-being, it takes time, but, and then the kids realize that, you know, they can use this space and what it's actually for. The behavior management, those, you know, the pink slips, I guess that you call, we don't, touch wood, really have too many major thing. Like, yeah, if we were to look at our learner information, our data of behavior management, it's really on the decline. Major incidents.
And I think that, well, I mean, just how you explain that, and I think you can put that a lot down to the setup. As you say, it hasn't happened overnight, but over time, this is the result that you're starting to see that decline of whatever you want to call it, like inappropriate behavior or
meltdown. Undesired behavior,
Undesired behavior, yeah. So do you find when they maybe get to year 5 and 6 that the year 5, 6 students don't tend to come, or do they?
Still will. Hopefully by that stage they will know how to ask for it themselves. So it's a lot of work. It's work with staff as well, knowing, you know, when's the appropriate time to send them, but also with the making sure that the kids at the school know that it doesn't get a negative connotation with the well-being space, that, you know, it's a positive thing, and just really reinforcing that's something we do.
Yeah.
Sometimes just reinforcing that Like it's a healthy thing. So we want kids to be using it. We track which kids are using it, how many kids are using it, the times, key times when they're using it. And that was one of the things we realized that, after break times was huge. So then it was like, all right, well, what proactive things can we do in classrooms? So now we all have mindfulness within the classroom for that first 10 minutes. Most kids just need that 10 minutes of quiet time, 5 minutes quiet time in the class, not silent, sustained reading, but actually a mindfulness activity. And then they don't present to the wellbeing room.
Totally makes sense. And the reason why I asked that is because I can't remember what school it was, but someone was saying that the older kids, particularly year sixes, kids at school didn't tend to use the room too much because it was seen as a bit of a weakness or tease for going there kind of thing. But being promoted, as you say, is a good thing, is a positive thing. That obviously hopefully that even as they get older, realize, well, it's still room that
There would still be, like, I guess when people come and visit our school and they're like, oh, this looks amazing, there's still, like, I'm still really aware of there's so many things that we can pick up and improve on. There still would be kids that would have that in there. And again, this is off work that the school's done here for many years, not just since I've been here. Like, I remember first day at this site, walking around and just seeing so many kids with headphones on, earphones, earmuffs, whatever you like to call it, blocking out sound. And I just could not believe that, the big red ones that you get at Bunnings, kids felt safe to wear those around. And so that's another, like, we have sensory items in each space and we have access to, earmuffs in the space as well. Really normalizing that it's okay to use that stuff and working to everyone's strengths.
I think the ear muffs, like, are quite.
Earmuffs, that's the right word, isn't it? I always get it wrong.
I think so. They're not plugs, they're muffs, definitely. They're quite common around schools, and the kids who don't necessarily use them, but they don't see it as a bad thing.
You would walk into any classroom learning space, we'd have, at least three kids wearing them. Some of them have opted. There's these small new ones, these ear loops that are a little bit smaller. They're a bit more expensive though. Families buy those for their own kids. There's obviously a lot of explicit teaching around when it's okay to use them, when it's not. They're generally using them for the right reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Mate, really appreciate the time. Like, honestly, this has been a fantastic conversation. So many takeaways. I've learned a lot personally myself. And, mate, the way you talk about the whole wellbeing space, obviously very passionate about it.
Yep.
You've put a lot of effort in, not only the last couple of years, but the people at the school before you did as well, to set this up. And it's a journey, isn't it? It's not like a sprint marathon. It's definitely a marathon. Like, just small steps over time definitely can have a massive impact on a school. And I think it's just starting, but also take consistent action.
Yeah.
Sometimes we start something and just sort of can, like, I don't know, what's the word, twiddle along kind of thing. But
taper off,
Taper off, that's the word. Thanks, mate. But I think the school's done a great job in the structure of giving you the opportunity to do this as the primary focus rather than anything to do with behavior management. I reckon that's a massive key thing.
Yeah, and that's thanks to the principal as well. To push at a lot of other sites. As you said, the wellbeing lead wears so many hats. They're in the role for 2 days. They're out of the class and then they're in the class. So I'm very fortunate. I probably should have said that at the start, but I'm out of the class for 5 days. Within mine. So running small group things, lots of check-ins with kids, but not all. So there'll be, wellbeing leaders listening to this going, I wish I had that or the dream, but work with your principal. They're only a human being as well. Show them, talk to them about how passionate you are and, show them that it'll make a difference.
No, absolutely, mate. I really, really appreciate the time and hopefully get a number of listeners tuning into this one because there are a lot of takeaways and a lot of things that can be applied to the classroom, but across the school as well, and just little little steps along the way. Where can people reach you, man? Are you on social media, or are you
Downfall of Mine is not self-promotion, that's for sure. No self-promotion. But yeah, feel free to chuck my email or phone number or anything on the when you do the notes or whatever.
Yeah. Or put your email down, mate. You might get a couple of late night calls otherwise. So
happy to, like, well, I do have like other Welbeck, I guess news does spread, but with things that you do at school, I'm happy to talk to any other wellbeing leader that wants to try something, and I'll tell you how many times it didn't work here before it started working as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think I forgot to mention this before, but you made a really good point about I can't remember exactly what it was, but you said you didn't come up with this, you've taken it off somebody else. And that's the thing, you don't have to reinvent entirely something new. Like, you take little bits and pieces that maybe have already been tried. There's a lot of information out there.
Yeah.
It's just taking bits and pieces and putting your own, molding it together kind of thing.
Yeah, which was part of the reason having yourself in Growing with Gratitude plug at the start of the year was just so we could learn, like, taking little parts from different people and trying not to do too much at once. So just really do one thing, do it well, and then see what we can add.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for coming on, mate, and really appreciate it, Chris.
Easy. No, thanks for the chat.